The idea is to build an app, spend about an hour building an app, and to understand some of the things that go into building an app. Now, I'll be perfectly honest with you, the app's not finished. This isn't a glorious, brilliant app that's ready to go into the store, but this is basically designed to see how far we can get in our first 60 minutes. So the idea is to show you a bunch of stuff, get your creative energies flowing, kind of kickstart the process, and then talk about some of the things that we would do after the 60 minutes. So, you know, this is your first 60 minutes in Windows 10, warts and all. If you have questions, feel free to email me, rogreen@microsoft.com. I would love to talk to you about this stuff. I am thinking of doing this as a extended episode or two or three of my Visual Studio Toolbox show, which is on Channel 9. So I am the host of a show called Visual Studio Toolbox, which is traditionally about tooling in Visual Studio, but I'm going to extend that to showing how to build things in Visual Studio. So I do want to kind of take this idea and build it out on that show. So it'd kind of be like build your first Windows 10 app in several days instead of only 60 minutes. And I don't have any slides at the moment. I may add some slides and upload them, but what I really wanted to do is just kind of show you what the development process was going to be like. So I want to build an app, and I thought about, you know, what type of app would we build, and I decided for a couple of reasons to build a weather app. So I'm going to build an app that eventually sort of starts to look like the weather app that ships with Windows 10, right? I mean, you can't have enough weather apps, right? The nice thing about building a weather app is I don't have to spend an awful lot of time designing the app, because I basically can build something that sort of looks like this. So one of the reasons to choose this is because I have a great model to work from, and I can learn how some of the things were done in here. The other thing I needed was something for which there was freely available data. So if we go to openweather.org, openweathermap.org, these guys provide weather data free. All you need to do is sign up for an API key, which is pretty easy to do, and then you get free weather data. So that was the second thing. I want an app that I can mimic. I need a data source. And then I also chose this because my good friend James Montemagno at Xamarin has also built a weather app using this data, and his code's out on GitHub, so there was somebody who'd already done this who I could leverage or borrow code from if I got into trouble. So those are the three reasons I chose to build a weather app. Okay, I'll show you the running version of it, so as far as we've gotten, and we'll see how to do this. We'll try to get this far in an hour. Okay, so we build. So we're going to build something like this. Okay, so we're going to display the weather. We're going to display the forecast. We're going to have this split view in the hamburger. And then we're going to do some adaptive UI. So the UI is going to adjust as the screen size changes. Okay, so it's a serviceable app. It ain't beautiful. There's a lot of, you know, cleaning up I can do, especially in terms of layout and stuff like that. This thing really should be more in the center, but this will get us started, and then we can figure out what to do eventually. So I've got current weather. I also want a place for historical data. And then I've got a home page. I've got the ability to do my location, which I haven't wired up yet. I'll have the ability to add favorites, which I haven't wired up yet, and there'll be settings. So I haven't really done any of that yet. So this is about as far as we think we can get in about an hour. Okay, so, and I'm going to do some creating of new and a lot of copying and pasting of existing code. Sound good? Okay, so let's build a Windows Universal application. There is something called Template 10, which is a series of templates provided by some guys at Microsoft. I'm not going to use those now because I want to literally start from scratch, but in general, I do recommend them. So I'm going to build a blank app, which I'm going to call Orlando Weather UWA for Universal Windows App. And then the first thing that comes up is this dialog which asks you which target and platform do you want to target. The initial RTM shipping version of Windows 10 was build 10.2.40. The November update, also known as Threshold 2 or TH2, is build 10.5.86. So Visual Studio is smart enough to know that I have both of these available to me. I'm running Visual Studio 2015 Update 2. I am running the November update of Windows 10. I do not have any pre-release versions of Windows 10 on this machine because it's my production machine, so I've got nothing but shipping software on here. But it does know that I'm running TH2 or the latest update, and so it gives me the ability to choose, do I want to target 10.5.86 and have 10.2.40 be the minimum version? Do I want 10.5.86 to be the minimum version? Do I want to target 2.40? I kind of have those choices. If I target 10.5.86 and have the minimum version be 10.2.40, then this will run on the original Windows 10. If I set the minimum version as 10.5.86, then you would not be able to install this application on a machine that didn't have the November update of Windows 10 on it. Okay. And then the interesting thing is if you have Visual Studio, if you install Visual Studio Update 2 on a version of Windows, the original version of Windows, then there's a conflict because the designer in Update 2 requires the 10.5.86 build of Windows. Okay, so you do have to kind of pay attention to this, and it's nice that we surface it initially. So because I have everything that's needed, Visual Studio Update 2, the 10.5.86 version of Windows, I'll just say OK and create my blank application. Okay, perfect. All right, so now I'm going to need some data. So what do we need? I'm going to use MVVM, model, view, view, model. So that pattern, familiar to us as XAML developers, we've used it in WPF, we've used it in Silverlight, you've used something similar in ASP apps if you're using MVC. There's always typically some kind of design pattern that you would use. I'm going to use MVVM, so I need a models folder. I always start with the data. Okay, and then here's a little tip and trick that I learned. I'm calling this Open Weather Map API. It's a RESTful API. I want the current weather data, so all I need to do is make a call to something like this. apiopenweathermap.org and pass in the name of the city or the city ID, and it's going to send me back data that's going to look something like this. So it's by default going to send me back JSON, which is fine. I don't really care how the data comes back. I just want to be able to get it into classes. I just want to be able to create a couple classes, one for the weather, one for the weather forecast, and then just use that data. Okay, so after a little bit of playing around with it, what I did was I got some code that looks like this, and I basically, just to start off, put it in a button on the main page. Let's call this, I want the one for city. There we go. Let's call this API. It's RESTful. I don't need to add any references. I just need to use HTTP client and pass in API openweathermap.org, passing in my API key, My units are imperial or metric, pass in the name of the city, and then I get JSON back. So get string async, if I pass in this URL, we'll send back JSON. And then all I did was I said, well, what's that JSON look like? Let's get rid of that. We don't need that. So what's the JSON look like? It looks like this. So I copied it. And then I came in here, and I created a class, which I called something like weather. And then this is so cool. Edit, paste special, paste JSON as classes. Bam! These are my classes that map to that JSON. That is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Now, you might ask, well, okay, so now I got a property called DT, I got one called lawn, one called lat, and if I want to know what these things mean, I just go to the documentation for this, and here's everything that gets returned and what it means, okay? So what I did then, and I'm just going to add in the existing ones. Models, let's get all of those. You can change the names of the properties, and as long as you are using Newtonsoft JSON, there it is, Newtonsoft.json. Oh, it was there, and then I typed and it disappeared. Okay, let's add the Newtonsoft, the JSON package. Okay, and now I say JSON property coord. This is what comes down. The service is sending me coord, but I'm going to turn it into coordinates. And then something like main. I really want it to be called main weather. DT is actually a date. Okay, so lon and lat, or longitude and latitude. Okay, so I did that for the weather. I've got one for the weather forecast. And then what I decided to do, this thing's still up and running, isn't it? It is running, but it won't let me get to it. Oh, because I'm at a breakpoint. Duh. Because I have a collection of weather forecasts, I didn't really want to have to deal with multiple classes, so I created a weather forecast class and just flattened out the forecast. Okay? And then when I receive the weather forecast as JSON, I'll translate it into those classes, and then I'm going to loop through each forecast and put it in my flattened out forecast. It just makes it a lot easier for me to work with. Okay? All right. So those are my models. Then I need a new folder. I need services. I need a service which is going to retrieve the data for me. And that's called weather service. So this is the code that calls the API to get the current weather and get the current weather forecast. There's my key. Don't use it. Get your own. Thank you. So you can get the weather by latitude and longitude, by city, by zip code. I will eventually add those capabilities. I want certainly latitude and longitude. I want to be able to get for your current location. So there's a handful of lines of code you can write to find out your current location and then pass that in for latitude and longitude, certainly by city, and then I also added zip code, and then same thing for forecast. And then what I did, this was on the airplane, I took the string that came back and stored it to a string so that if I was offline, I could just comment out the actual call, uncomment the JSON string, and then run the app offline. So that's my mocking of a mock. That's a mock, if you will. Okay. All right, so now, what else do we need? Well, then we're going to need view models. We've got the model. We'll get to the views eventually. So now we need the view model. And this is pretty much the way that I build MVVM apps. Start with the model, then build the view models, then build the views. So let's add some existing view models. I've got one for home. And then this is just standard MVVM C#. I've got various properties of the current weather, temperature, description, humidity, pressure, etc. I've got some commands. I need this delegate command, so I usually add a folder called helpers, which is going to have my delegate command class. Add existing item. Helpers. Okay, now at the moment I'm not actually using these, but they're in there in case I'm going to have buttons that are hooked up to commands. So at the moment I don't have a button that says get the weather or add favorites or whatever, but when I do, then I've got the commands hooked up for that. And so this is just the code that retrieves, that calls into the service to get the weather, then sets a bunch of properties. And so this code in here, and again, this is not necessarily specific to Win10, but I think that it becomes a little more likely that you would use this in a Windows 10 app. The service returns the temperature, the minimum temperature, the maximum temperature, the humidity, and then what I want to display is... Where's that app? There it is. I want to display 80% humidity. Wind is northeast at 8 miles an hour. I want to display the degree sign and the F for Fahrenheit or whatever. So I played around with using converters. So I actually have a bunch of converters, date to day of week string converter, and date to string converter, and humidity to string converter, and a whole bunch of those. That's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is to just create properties of this view model and set those in code inside the view model. And I kind of went back and forth on it, and for simplicity, I chose just to set these things in code rather than using converters. It makes my XAML cleaner. And one of the other benefits to this is I eventually will probably make this into a cross-platform application. I'll use Xamarin, and maybe I'll use Xamarin Forms to build the iOS and Android versions, because that's way easier than having to play around with the iOS storyboards and build the native application. So Xamarin Forms is awesome. It would also give me the ability to build the Windows 8 app and the Phone 8 app. And Xamarin Forms has XAML, but does it literally have the same converters that we have, and do they work literally the same way? I'm not 100% sure. So this gives me the ability, and how do converters work in native iOS apps and native Android apps? I don't really know. So this basically insulates me from having to worry in all the other platforms, how do you take a number, 53, and have it display as 53 with a little circle F, right? So that's the reason I did it this way. So now my XAML is going to look like, where are my views? Oh, I should probably go back to the version that has views. There we go. So now when I display the weather or the temperature, all I have to do is say text block text equals binding temperature, and I know it's going to say 57 with a circle F. Okay? So this, I think, is going to wind up making it much easier to make this as a cross-platform application. If I was literally just targeting Windows 10, then I might go back to using converters, you know. But I think, I haven't tested this theory, but my theory is, in a world where you build the application for multiple platforms, this is always going to be a little bit easier. Okay? So that's why my home view model has a lot of code in here that sets the display type properties, and then I have those as properties of the home view model, along with an observable collection of forecasts, which uses this flattened out weather forecast class. And then somewhere in here, and that is actually right here, is where I call into the API to get back a number of instances of, to get back the weather forecast, and that is in my weather forecast root.forecast. This is what comes back from the API, and then I flatten it out into my easy to use weather forecast class, because if we put a breakpoint here, so yeah, let's put a breakpoint here and look at what the what comes back. This winds up, as in any application, being, you know, some of the hardest part of it. Okay, so weather root gets sent back by the service. It's got a name. Oh, too bad you can't see that. So weather root has a name property, which is the name of the city we're in, which is Orlando. But then it has a wind, which is the degree of the cloudiness, the where the wind's coming from, and the speed. So whether or not it's cloudy is part of wind. And then it has a weather object, which has the description, clear sky. Main weather has the humidity, the temperature, the pressure. Today's high and low temperature. So to get the name of the city, it's weatherroot.name. To get the temperature, it's weatherroot.mainweather.temperature. To get the pressure, to get the description, it's weatherroot.weatherofzero.description. So you spend a fair amount of time having to navigate through your classes. So, you know, maybe in a future version of this, I would just flatten out the weather instead of just the weather forecast. Okay. All right, so that's the home view model. So we've got our model, we've got our data source, which is a RESTful API sitting out in the cloud, pun intended, since it's a weather app. And the cool thing about that is I don't know what that's written in, I don't know what cloud they're hosting it on, and I don't care as a developer. As an employee of Microsoft working in the evangelism group, I care deeply what cloud they use. I hope it's ours. But as a developer, I really don't care. All I want to know is how do you call the API? It's RESTful, so I can just use HTTP client. And then what comes back and how do I parse that to get out the data I want? Right? Then I've got my models. My view model is just standard view model code to call the service and prepare the application for displaying things. Okay, so right, we've already spent now 20-something minutes talking about stuff that's not at all Windows 10 specific, and I did that on purpose because this is a XAML app. Yeah, this is a Windows 10 app that's using the Universal Windows platform. It's a Universal Windows app. We write it once. It'll run anywhere Windows 10 runs. We get to take advantage of all the goodness of Windows 10. We get to use some of the more personal computing stuff. We can hook into Cortana. We can add inking to it. We could run it on a HoloLens if we had a HoloLens. Great. That's awesome. But it's still a XAML and C-sharp application, and a lot of what we're doing in this is standard XAML, standard C-sharp, standard MVVM. So that's the first thing you gotta understand. I know that when we introduce new things, we talk about all the distinguishing features of it, and we gloss over the fact that it's just another app. It's just another XAML C-sharp app. So if you know XAML and you know C-sharp, you know absolutely everything you need to get started building Windows 10 applications, because tons of this stuff is either, if not very similar, then almost exactly the same. Okay, so if you looked at this right now and you said, oh, what kind of application is this? You'd say, oh, it's an MVVM app, right? Because he's got view models in there. Okay, so now let's start building some UI, and at this point, I'm going to start doing stuff in more of a Windows 10 fashion, if you will. So let's add a main page. Now, we have a main page here, but of course, I don't want this main page, A, because it's got nothing I want, and B, because it's not in the Views folder, so I'm going to delete this main page. And I'm going to add a new item, blank page. Now, who has done Windows Store development back in the 8.8.1 days? Okay, one person. You'll notice that the basic page option is gone. The basic page used to add support for navigation and a whole bunch of other stuff. We don't have that anymore. We just now have blank pages. And you may have also noticed that the sample templates, the split view and the grid view templates are also gone. We just have basically blank apps. The main reason we got rid of those project templates is we found that although they were a great learning tool, you basically wound up with every single app in the store looked either like a grid view or a split view, because that's how people built apps. So we decided, rather than shoehorn you into this is how thou shalt build apps, when they were really designed to be samples, that we wouldn't make them actual templates and would make them available as samples, which I hope we did, but I never actually checked. Okay, so let's create a main page. Now, in this main page, what are we going to want? We are going to want, obviously, a grid. We're going to want, the first thing that I usually do is create my split view. And the split view is this device here, which is will wind up being a very popular and very standard way of offering navigation and applications. The weather application has it. The sports application has it. And the mail application has it. This is my personal mail, so I don't have a problem sharing it with you. Okay, so I want something that looks like this. There's a couple things I need. I need this panel here, which gives me the ability to add navigation, and then I want this here, which is called the hamburger controller, the hamburger button, because it's three rectangles, it looks like a hamburger. Okay, so let's, first we will add a split view. So I'm going to copy that code and put it in here. Okay, all right, so the split view control is the expandable thing that provides us with our navigation. Okay, so I'm going to call mine app split view. There's display modes, there's compact inline, there's a couple others. We'll get into those in a second. And then you can determine whether the pane is open or false, what's the background, and you can set an opacity. And then inside the split view is a pane, and the inside that is going to contain whatever you're going to use for navigation. So in this case, I'm using a stack panel of radio buttons, and they're tagged home, location, favorites. so that I can have one click handler called split view item click. And then I can use built-in symbols. There's a map, there's a favorite, there's a setting, there's a home. So I don't necessarily have to go out and purchase or, God forbid, create these things here. Okay. Of course, you can go out and get some of them. SyncFusion has a great tool for creating these, and there's libraries of them. But there's a bunch that we ship built in. Okay. All right, so then we're going to need, what else? We're going to need a frame, which is where the actual content of the application goes. So I'll call that main frame. And then, of course, in the split view item click event handler, we're going to need to do things, and that will eventually do something like this. Will, based on the tag, send me to various pages, all of which don't exist at the moment. So I'm just going to comment that out for the moment. Okay. So leave anything out. Let's build this. Yes, okay, so in my app.xaml, we're going to main page, which of course I have in the views, so I just need to add a using views. And we should be able to run this. Awesome. Isn't that great? So, first of all, we notice a couple things. One is that I can't really see anything here, and two is that this is in my way, and three is how do I get this to open? Other than that, this is perfect. Okay, so first of all, this is why that counter is in the way. We enable it by default. I think this is a great thing to have access to, but I never ever want it on by default, this enable rate, frame rate counter. I'll guarantee you, the first thing I want, the first time I fire up a view, I'm not interested in the frame rate. I'm interested in whether or not anything in that view is showing up where I want it to. So this is a great tool to have. I wish that this was in tools options to have this on by default or not. So the first thing I do is comment that out. The second thing I notice, a couple things. One is I don't have the hamburger button. So the hamburger control is not part of the split view, in fact. The hamburger button is literally a button that you have to create yourself. So let's add the button, which I will call hamburger button. And all the hamburger button is a stack panel with three rectangles. And then a hamburger button click, which is going to, that's not what I wanted. The hamburger button click is going to open and close the split view based on whether it's open or not. Okay, so now if I run this, it opens, it closes, it's beautiful. We get a little bit of an issue going on right here, and that's because of the default radio button. So what I did to get rid of that was I added a resource in app.xaml to change the way radio buttons look. So I need just a application.resources, resource dictionary. Okay. Let's just copy all of this. That'll be easier. And then get rid of the stuff we don't need. Okay. I'm not sure if I actually use any of these brushes, and we're certainly not using these converters. So now, if I just change the way radio buttons look, now I get this. Perfect. Okay, and then if I choose one of these, then I'm going to go to that page. Okay, so let's add into views. I have a couple of existing pages. I'm going to add the favorites page, which has nothing in it at the moment. And I'm going to add the location page, which I'm pretty sure is empty. And I'll add the settings page, and then we'll build. Oh, I don't even have a settings page. Yeah, cool. All right, so then let's add a new item, and we're going to build out the home page. Okay, which now means that I can uncomment this whole thing here. Okay, looks good. So I can go to the home page. Right? Cool. Oh, apparently I did use those styles. So I'm going to have to get those back. That answers my question whether or not I used any of these. Best way to find out if you actually used code is to delete it and wait for the app to break. Okie dokie. All right. I'm not going to spend too much time copying and pasting and seeing what I miss since I do have a working version of the app, so I'm going to be very mindful of that. Okay. So there's our location, there's favorites, and there's the home page. Okay, this, by the way, here was added in Visual Studio 2015 Update 2. It brings up the live visual tree, which is this control here that shows you the tree of your XAML elements in real time and gives you the ability to enable selection. So if you select something in the application, you go directly to it in the live visual tree. That was added in 2015 Update 2, which came out a few weeks ago. And if you don't want that on while you're using the application, it's more useful than the frame rate, but you may say it's still in my way until I'm ready for it. You just come into debugging and enable UI debugging tools for XAML and just uncheck show runtime tools in the application. And then it doesn't show up as a toolbar in the application. You can easily get it back if you want it by going to debug Windows Live Visual Tree and the attendant Live Property Explorer. Okay. So, now what? All right, so let's pop back to the working application and see what else we did, because we have 15 minutes and we want to make some progress. Okay, so what I wound up doing in this is I decided, and if you look at the weather app, it's got a background, and so I wanted something similar in this weather app. So what I did was I added, under assets, just open it, it's just a JPEG. So I took this, which I Actually, I took that picture. Which explains why it's WP underscore. So I took that picture, I think, from the waterfront in Kirkland, Washington, which is next door to Redmond. And so what I did was I put it in, not the main page, but I went into the home page and I decided I wanted a couple of things. One is I wanted a pivot. Now the pivot is basically how we do tabs. So if we go into, the weather app doesn't necessarily have them, it just has a forecast. The sports app has it. So if you go to news or scoreboard or slideshows or videos, this is a pivot. So I added a pivot here, new control called pivot. And the pivot has a right header, which has a command bar, which has two buttons, one for favorite, one for zoom. So I wanted, haven't actually done anything with it yet, but I wanted a favorite button here that you could add to favorites, and I wanted a search button so you could search for a particular city or a zip code. Okay, and then you have the ability, which used to work, to have it display the tooltips. I'm not sure why it's not working. So that is my right pivot. Yep. And then I have a pivot item, which is called current weather. So the pivot item is the equivalent of a tab. So I have a pivot item called current weather, which is going to have UI in it. And I set the background to that picture. So now when I run this application, I get this background. And then I have another pivot item all the way down here, which has historical data and text that says historical data goes here, because I haven't added it yet. So that's how we get this kind of tab thing. So we have the navigation, we have the equivalent of the tabs, and I had to play around a little bit with it to get the hamburger button the exact same size as this and set the colors right. It wasn't too terribly difficult to do, but it took a little while. So now we're actually ready to display some information. So inside the pivot item, which is just a container, it's a container like a page, it's a container like a stack panel. In here I've got a stack panel called current weather stack panel, bound to city, because of course in my home page on page loaded, create a new instance of the view model, and then get weather by city, and then get the weather forecast by city. So pass in the name of the city, that will give me a city ID, which I can then use to get the forecast by city. And then set the data context of the whole thing to home view model. And then I can just say, show me the city, show me the temperature, show me the description, the wind speed direction, and that gives me all of this. Then there's also an icon which comes down as part of the data. And you just pass in the name of the icon, and it's sitting in openweathermap.org/img/W, that thing, which is like DO3 or something like that, .png, but that is a cloud. Play around with the sizing, and here's the current weather in Orlando. Okay, now I want the forecast, and I played around a little bit with where should the forecast go. Here in the weather app, this information is front and center, and then the forecast is below it. And there's a bunch of other information that, I don't know, I may or may not add to this application. So I played around with, does this go up top? Does it go below? I wound up putting it, I wanted it on the right. Okay, so in home page, I put it in a list view called forecast list view, bound to forecasts, which is a collection of weather forecasts. It's my flattened out weather forecast. And all I do is take the data from the API, stick it in the various classes, and then deconstruct that and make an observable collection of forecasts. And then here's my template, day description, min, max temp, humidity, etc. Took me a little bit of time to figure out what to do with the days, oops, because they came back as UTC and in Unix. They came back as like Unix UTC. So I had to use date time offset from Unix time seconds of whatever came back and then convert it to local time. So it took me a little while to figure out how to take Unix dates in GMT time and turn it into date times that .NET understands using the local time. But that's the code I used for that. So that's why I get this. And I haven't yet figured out how not to report the seconds, because I'm not sure how often I care that the sun rises at 3:54, which I also don't believe. I think that's Pacific time. So here's a little bug in the app. I really don't care that sun rises at 6:54, 46 seconds. I do care about the 6:54, but I'm sure I don't care about the 46 seconds. So I haven't yet played around, bothered to strip the seconds off yet, but I certainly should and will. Okay, so there's my list view. Now, the question is, and I'm going to comment out the code that makes this happen. Okay, so now we have this application. I'm going to comment out both of the places where I use this. This adaptive UI that you might have heard of. Okay, so now here's our application. Happened. All right, fine. I'll leave that code in. Because apparently commenting it out breaks the app. Okay. So rather than show you what it looks like before I solve the problem, I'll show you what it looks like with solving the problem. Okay, so now the question is, where's my data? There it is. I'm on wireless. I'm impatient. Okay, so the application looks great. Now the question is, what's it going to look like on other devices? One of the beautiful things about the Universal Windows platform, one of the key features of this, is that in the old days, in the Windows 8 days, you wrote the Windows Store version of the app. You wrote the Windows Phone version of the app, separate executables, separate application packages, separate UI, because you didn't have the ability to create the UI once and have it adapt to the device. So you could share all your code, your view models, your services, all your code could be shared, but you had to write the UI multiple times. And one of the key features of the Windows 10 world, the Universal Windows application world, is you write the UI once, you get one executable that will run anywhere Windows runs, and then you get to ask yourself, what does the application look like when it's running on a phone versus a tablet versus an Xbox versus a HoloLens versus a Surface Hub versus a Raspberry Pi or whatever it runs on? And the way you do that is through adaptive UI. So let's actually run this in the Now let's run it this way first. Sometimes I show it in the simulator or in the emulator. Sometimes you can just do it here. What happens if the application has less screen real estate? Notice that it eventually, right, as I get smaller and smaller, this list view is just smart enough to display in multiple rows. Cut down the number of columns and display multiple rows. But eventually, a couple things happen. One is the forecast goes underneath the current weather, and secondly, the split view pane, the split view disappears. Okay? What that means is without having to rewrite the UI, without having to worry about it, I'm covered for when somebody runs this application on a phone. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to just use these visual state managers and these adaptive triggers to change various properties of the UI elements so that the application looks differently based on the screen real estate. So on a phone, you've got this much space and it's kind of vertical. But then when you move to the Surface Pro 3, for example, you've got this much screen real estate. On the Xbox, you'd have a little bit more. On a Surface Hub, you'd have huge amounts of real estate. And then presumably, there are additional devices being invented that I don't know about, you don't know about, but what if we invent something that's in between the phone and the Surface? What if we actually do create the Surface Mini that's been rumored? I don't know if we're going to, I hope we do, but let's say we do, and it's half the width of the Surface Pro 3. I don't have to redo my app for that. I don't have to ship a new version of the app. I can just basically set a new trigger. So in XAML, here comes the emulator, and other than the fact that I need to, I've got some UI work to do on this, clearly. I need the phone that's this wide and this tall, then I'd be all set. That'd be hilarious. Remember, like, you watch movies from the 80s, they've got the portable phones that are this big. I need a phone like that, then this UI would work great. So what I do is I create these visual state managers and adaptive triggers, and I say in between 0 and 720, I want the screen to adjust in a particular way. What I want is, let's get this back running locally. What I want is for the forecast to go below the current weather. So I've got a list view and a stack panel. And the easiest way to do this in Windows 10 is to use something called, where is it? A relative panel. The relative panel is new in Windows 10 and gives me the ability to align the child elements relative to each other or relative to the panel. So what I initially said was the list view would just wind up to the right of the current weather stack panel. And so in normal, this list view is to the right of this, and they both align to the top of the panel. They align to the left of the panel and the top of the panel, which are the defaults, and the forecast list view is to the right of the current weather stack panel. And then in this XAML, which is a fair amount of XAML to write. It turns out it's a piece of cake to do in Blend, by the way. You don't hear that said very often. I say in between 0 and 720, I want the current weather stack panel to align horizontally center with the panel. Because what I want is I don't want it to be up against the left anymore. I want it to bounce into the middle. So that bouncing into the middle happens because I have now aligned it in the center horizontally of the panel. It's still aligned to the top of the panel, but but it just moves over into the center. And then I want the forecast list view to align left with the panel and to be below the current weather stack panel, in between 0 and 720. When I hit 720, then I want the current weather stack panel to align with the left of the panel. I want the forecast list view to be to the right of the panel, top of the panel, and to be to the right of the current weather stack panel. So it's a little tricky sometimes to figure out what combinations in the relative panels you need to use to move things around, but what it gives me is the ability to change where this thing is to go from horizontal to vertical inside the application. And then what I also did on the main page is I did the same thing with the split view. In between 0 and 720, the split view display changes to overlay and it's false. At 720, compact overlay and not open. And then at 1024, compact overlay and true. So what that means is at 720, it disappears, although you can still get it back. It's not gone, it's just hidden. When I hit 720, it shows up, there we go, compressed, if you will. And then if I get wide enough, then it opens. Oops. And there's two ways of opening it. One is compact overlay, one is compact in line. So if I change this to compact in line, and then run this locally. And then it opens up and stays open, which in the Mail app is actually kind of useful because there's interesting information here. In the Weather app, it's just a waste of space. So that's why I set it to compact overlay. And compact overlay opens but disappears when you click off it. Okay? So disappears when you click off it. So that in 61 minutes approximately is about how far we get with a Windows 10 app. So what have we seen? We've seen that it is a XAML. Now, of course, you can build these with JavaScript, but I'm a XAML C-sharp guy. It's a XAML C-sharp application. If you know XAML and C-sharp, then you know a giant chunk of what you need to know in here. There's an awful lot of code in here that's got nothing to do with Windows 10. It's standard MVVM. There's standard XAML in here. We've seen some new XAML controls. We saw the split view. And we learned that in order to make a split view work, you add your own button called the hamburger button. They're not a single control. We saw the relative panel. We saw the pivot, which is how we get this. And then we saw the adaptive UI, which, again, has got, if you think about it, it's got nothing to do with the phone, right? The application, all the application knows is that my screen real estate has changed. It doesn't say, oh, he's running on a phone, I should look like this, because I'm not actually running on a phone right now. I'm running on my Surface, but I just narrowed it down so it looks like this. So the cool thing about the adaptive triggers is you don't write code that says if running on a phone, if running on a Surface, if running on an Xbox. You can write code like that. There are times you need to do that. Like if you want to know in your application, is there a back button? So I want to wire up the back button. Well, this Surface doesn't have a back button. So if I write code that says on, you know, wire up a back button pressed event, it's not going to compile, or at runtime it's going to blow up. So you can write code that says if I'm on a phone, do the following. But in terms of the UI, you just get to base it on screen real estate. And then you do, of course, have to spend a fair amount of time deciding what the application looks like based on the screen real estate, and then figure out what properties you need to set. These adaptive triggers, using the Visual State Manager, you're just setting properties. So all you're doing is changing properties of the various components to make them move around, resize, look differently. And now this application should run anywhere. It should theoretically, I haven't tried this, run on a HoloLens. So at the end of that talk, I wanted to show the weather app running in the HoloLens emulator, and actually ran it in the HoloLens emulator, but it didn't seem to be working. And I discovered afterwards that the problem was that I had run the wrong version of the app. I had run the version that I was working on throughout the session, not the finished version that actually works. And I think I might have left the impression with the people in the audience that there was something wrong with the HoloLens emulator, when in fact the only problem was up here. So I'm in the Channel 9 studio right now, and I want to show you what I wanted to show in that session. So here is the working version of the app. And what I want to do is run it in the HoloLens emulator. I don't have a HoloLens, but I can get the HoloLens emulator and use that. And that's free, which is awesome. So you can search for the HoloLens emulator. You can find it from the Using the HoloLens Emulator page. You click right here. The HoloLens Development Toolkit will download and install. I already have it installed. So you can click here, and it would download. I've got it already. And what you wind up with when you go into Visual Studio is the ability to choose HoloLens emulator. So you install it the same way you install the mobile emulators. Okay, so now if I run this working version of the app and I select HoloLens emulator, so it builds. Now, of course, like any emulator, it takes a while for the emulator to start up. That's why I did it ahead of time. So now here's this app working in the HoloLens emulator, and I can kind of move around, and that'll be pretty good. So here's the app. Now what I want to do is I want to actually make selections. In a HoloLens, to make a selection, you hold your finger up in the air and you move it, which of course isn't going to work here. So I can do that using the mouse. I can also, if I hold down Control and slide up, what I can also do is Control A to move around. Actually, let me go check the documentation so I remember how to use the HoloLens emulator. Use the W, A, S, and D keys on your keyboard. So W to move closer, D to move backwards and left, S, this is moving back, A, so I'm not really understanding why I've got two of them on there. I'm kind of disoriented for some reason. There we go. So it takes a little bit of getting used to it. Now what I want to do is actually make the app work. So I want to click here. So my first thought, of course, was to drag the mouse over here. And then if you right-click and hold Enter, that's a selection. But of course, nothing was working. And then I realized, if you look right under Friday, right above the 51 degrees, there is a little circle there. That's what the gaze is on. That's actually the equivalent of the mouse cursor. So what you need to do is move that, see that little square, if I move that to the hamburger menu and now right click, that selects the hamburger menu. Okay, so that's what I wanted to show in the session. We built a UWA Windows 10 app from scratch. We can run it on the desktop, we can run it in the phone emulators, and without modifying the application at all, we can run it on the HoloLens. Now, of course, if we were going to make this a HoloLens app, we'd probably do a bunch of stuff to the UI to make it a HoloLens app, but you don't have to. Remember, the key thing is you write the app once and it runs on any device that Windows runs on, and as you can see here in this demo, it also runs on the HoloLens without having to make any changes to it. Cool. So thanks for your time. I'll let you guys go. I'll stick around for questions, but we're eating into lunch. Thanks for attending the session. Have a great rest of the time.